thank you. Whatever he says, you can carry on doing that as long as you like. Right, so yeah, I'm John Butterworth, and I'm a particle physicist. It's quite a privilege that now when you say at parties you're a particle physicist, people don't always just blank you and talk to someone else. So some people have actually heard of my experiment, the Large Hadron Collider. I'm presuming the large bit being a synonym for big is why I'm here. I think, you know, given that we didn't... It's good that we were in the papers, you know. We haven't, people actually heard when we started up. And given that we haven't destroyed the world yet, we're at your average party, slightly above Liberal Democrats and bankers. So it's good. Now, I don't know. The image of particle physics also benefited a lot from the Big Bang theory. I guess that shows you quite how far we had to go, really. But when I say the Big Bang theory, of course, I mean the sitcom, not the Big Bang theory. I think most people kind of think the Big Bang was a good plan. You know, it was good that we did that. But they don't seem terribly keen that we kind of retry it in Geneva every now and then. Of course, I mentioned Geneva because that's where I work. CERN, the Large Hadron Collider's there. And so I also work at University College London, so I'm flying back and forth all the time. But my experiment is actually in CERN. When I say my experiment, I do share it. I share it with about 3,000 people. Our first academic publication was a letter. Now, letter is academic ease for very short paper. It was 4 pages long without the author list. With the author list, it was 20 pages long. But my name is in there. My mum checked. Actually, Brian Cox's name is in there as well, but there we go. Because I'm so mega intelligent, I am going to refer to my crib sheet every now and then. I'm sorry about this, but, you know. So, bold text, what was I going to say next? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm flying back and forth to Geneva all the time. It's not very eco-friendly. It's not so good for the environment, I'm aware. But on the other hand, the environment should just be fucking grateful we haven't sucked it into a black hole by now, I reckon. It's kind of a glass half-full situation there. I'll get the C word in eventually, if I can hang it. I'm not quite sure where. I've already said Brian Cox. the other thing is, you know, it would be a lot less good for the environment if we had an LHC each. So it's something quite noble about the fact that we built one, we're really using it, and we're sharing it out there. And if, you know, and if you're going to have LHCs, best to have one and everyone sharing it and work on it together. And if you didn't have an LHC, then, you know, you would just never understand the origin of mass. And that would be a real shame given the effort the Pope went to. Right. Go on, laugh while I look at my next joke. Bollocks. All right, okay. So travel was one of the reasons I actually got into particle physics in the first place. I mean, I like the physics as well, but my family was not one of those that ever went on like foreign holidays and stuff. So although I am thoroughly middle class now, I probably wasn't then. Well, maybe I don't know. Anyway, we didn't go skiing and that. So the first time I ever went on holiday was when I flew to Hamburg. I knew that. I don't know why I had to read that off here, because I knew that. it's good, isn't it? I flew to Hamburg. It was the first time I'd ever been on an aeroplane, and I was going out there to start my PhD on this big underground collider. That one was in Hamburg. The one now is in Geneva. The different places keep up. But I was feeling so pleased with myself. I was on the intellectual pinnacle. I was, you know, a PhD student, quantum physicist, Übermensch kind of intellectual. On the other hand, Übermensch was the only German word I knew, and I was a little worried that I was going to kind of land there, and it was going to go horribly wrong. The only time I'd ever been abroad before was Wales, or a few times with the family. It's very nice, Wales. And I'd had a school trip to Normandy. And a school trip to Normandy was not a really good prep for this whole Hamburg thing. I grew up in Manchester, actually from there. I don't live there now either, and it was a long time ago. But Manchester to Southampton in a coach with a bunch of school kids, 8 hours. Then a night ferry to Normandy. We got to Le Havre. We kind of went around, looked at some tapestry and that, and all puked up when we had some pink burgers. And I went around bumping into French-looking people going, pardon, so we could try our O-level French. It was good, and then we all came back again, and it was good. You know, it was a bit of a laugh. The main problem was socks. My mum had packed some clean socks for me. And I'd been 48 hours very sweaty and doing all this stuff and forgot to change. So when I got back again, I had to kind of carve them off my feet with a Stanley knife and soak my feet in vinegar for a week before I could walk again. But it was... I did learn a little from the experience. When I went to Hamburg, I actually took some socks with me. And I got off there, and there were senior PhD students who could actually speak German and could actually, you know, show me around, show me where the good bars were, tell me that they weren't really in the Reeper band, that was just like Blackpool with more tits. And then we went to Altona. And we got there, and we were just heading into this really nice bar, and I realised I left my bag in the restaurant we'd just eaten in. And this was bad, because not only did I have my passport in, I had my clean socks in as well. So I had to go back again. I got back to the railway station, got on the tube, or the S-Bahn, I call it there, Germany. And then I realised I got the wrong train. I realised this about two stops too late. And then I got the train back again. I was waiting at a station I'd never heard of before, in a country I'd never been to before, in a language I didn't speak, to go back to somewhere... a restaurant, I couldn't remember where it was, that probably didn't have my bag anyway. That Ubermensch thing had kind of gone out a window by this stage. And bizarrely enough, I actually got my bag back. The real low point was the point when I realised I looked up and the sign, the station was called Dipstick. I think I kind of bounced back. I went back and I got my bag, actually, in the end. It was very nice. The restaurant people had kept it for me. I even got a PhD in the end, and now I've got my little fancy frequent flyer card because I'm going back and I'm very, you know, all totally au fait with this foreign thing. It all works. I know how to do it. I do have a bit of a reflex that when anyone stops me in whatever foreign language it is, I respond in staccato German. But you'd be amazed how often that works, especially with the Swiss. It's really good. All right. That's another joke, so I can read my thing here, you know. Yeah, right, where am I? Okay, yeah, so parties. Yeah, people ask me how it's going. Have you found the Higgs yet? Have you got any black holes? Have you found extra dimensions? It's all good. We've broken up a lot of protons. We've learned quite a lot about the quarks and the gluons that live inside them. Quarks are the kind of fundamental particles that live inside protons, and the gluons are the things that stick them together. Gluons, right? Yeah, clues in the name. We've got this thing, you know, the Big Bang. It was a Big Bang. You know? And we have this thing, the pinnacle of physical understanding of the universe is where we have all the quantum field theory that all the last N Nobel Prize winners in physics put together. It's called the Standard Model. And the beauty of physics is often in the maths, really, rather than in the names. So, the next page. Yeah, right, so particle physics. What we're actually doing is breaking up these protons and looking at what happens inside them. And Frank Close was his name, who described particle physics as being like throwing very expensive watches at each other, breaking them up and trying to look where all the bits went and trying to work out from that how watches work. That's pretty much what we're doing. I can get with that one, especially if you go through Geneva Airport as often as I do. You go along the walkways, right, and it's watch advert, advert for watches, watch advert. There's occasional bank adverts as well, but the watch adverts are... Really, it's like, buy our stupid watch because it's got bits of the Titanic in it. Buy our stupid watch, it's got moon rocks in it. We got a moon to build bloody watches. Buy our stupid watch because your smug-looking kid will inherit it when he inherits your secret cave full of gold that you nick from, you know. You can see how you can get the idea that it would be quite nice to break. Breaking watches up is quite a nice... I wonder sometimes if I could market a watch that's got actual protons from the LHC in it. I think there's a winner there, especially given that every proton is quantum mechanically identical to every other proton in the universe. I think no one would ever catch me out anyway if I was there. On the other hand, you know, I mean, does anyone know if the moon rocks are really in there? I mean, you'd have to break the thing up anyway, and then you could have to wear a swatch. Wouldn't be good. Anyway, the reason I fly back and forth is because my machine is out there, my experiment's out there. I also teach at UCL. I'm teaching special relativity at the moment. I also have a family here who expect me to come and empty the bins every now and then and stuff. But So I teach undergraduates at UCL. I'm teaching special relativity at the moment. And it's a comfort to know that the fact that I spend a couple of hours a week, 3 hours, 4 hours a week, flying at something like 800 kilometres an hour. I mean, because of special relativity, you know, when you're travelling fast, time slows down. It really does slow down. It doesn't feel like it's slowing down because you're sitting next to a fat guy who wants to take your armrest. It's just a wide guy, shall we say. okay, I didn't get on with him very well. He was just obnoxious. It doesn't matter how big he was. The thing is, time slows down, and it really does slow down. So because of this, I gain about 3 nanoseconds a week. And it's 3 billionths of a second, which is not even really enough time to pay me back for the time I spent looking through the Swiss in-flight magazine looking for stories at hand about watches. Anyway, the final thing I'll leave you with is that the special relativity also, things are shorter. So if you're traveling past me, if you have a light inextensible rod, they always have those in mechanics problems. If you have one of those and you're traveling past me very quickly, then it's shorter. From my point of view, it really is shorter. It's not just an optical illusion. It's really actually shorter. But special relativity is symmetric. So if you're traveling past me that way very fast, I'm traveling past you that way very fast. So my rod is shorter than your rod from that point of view. So it's a scientifically proven fact that everybody's rod from their own point of view is longer than everyone else's. So I'll leave you there.